Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. And welcome to the podcast, everybody. We're going behind the curtain, purely politics today, and because there's always something to talk about when we're in the political world, of course. And a lot this week, and a lot that involves the media and Russia, or at least the investigation. So much to talk about. So I've asked my friend Richard Gordon to come back. He's a political strategist. He's an attorney. He's advised campaigns for, I think, somewhere around 30 years now, which is pretty good since he's 32. So, Richard, welcome back to the podcast. Always good to touch base with you.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
First, I want to drag you into my world. This week, of course, retiring Senator Jeff Flake gave a speech on the floor of the Senate in which he basically warned against this president's railing against the media, this notion of fake news, and talked about how Stalin-like it is, and that even in Russia, Nikita Khrushchev said, you know, you can't even talk like that. It's just it's so wrong for the preservation of government. You know, when something's not good enough for Nikita Khrushchev and the president here is doing it, it makes you wonder. What is your take on this whole? I mean, there's the fun part of Trump's attack on the media because people laugh. How dangerous is it?
Oh, I think it's very dangerous. You know, you started by saying dragging us into your world. You work in the media all the time, but it is our world in the sense of we are so dependent on a free media. And what President Trump is doing is so unprecedented. It is such an attack on the system and this country. For so long, we have lived, going way back to the beginning of this country, on the First Amendment and the right of the press to speak openly, and we need it for our democracy to survive. Thank God for Senator Flake. Thank God for someone to have the courage to stand up and say this, because this is what everybody talks about, but no one in those circles has the courage to step up and actually say, this is what it means, this is what happens. And for someone, every time he is criticized, to yell fake news so his people believe it's fake news, is a danger and an erosive process, and it is going to undermine the very basis of this country and the basis that these people keep yelling about being such great patriots. If you're such great patriots, you have to support the press. You may disagree with an article. You may disagree with what a reporter or a newsmaker has to say. But that doesn't mean the press is bad. That means they made a mistake. There's a huge difference here. Thank goodness Jeff Flake had the guts to come forward and say what he said.
And, of course, he got a little support from his Arizona Senate colleague, John McCain, who also issued a statement kind of reiterating some of those points and the importance of the press. But I tell you what, from all looks, it seemed as though, you know, Senator Flake was kind of on his own. You didn't get a lot of support from his fellow Republicans on the floor of the Senate. My understanding is a lot weren't even there. So he stands alone as he gets ready to exit the Senate anyway. Some think it's all set up to challenge the president in 2020 for the, you know, the Republican nomination. We'll see how that goes. But for now, it just seems as though whatever this president does, whatever he says, we know it doesn't seem to, you know, move the base much at all. They're going to be with him. But you would think that this kind of ongoing attack, which, of course, it's Russia, it's everything, that this is what the press monitors. It's how we find out about this kind of stuff. And if you lose the support of the public, you're in deep trouble in maintaining a society. It sounds like rhetorical comments. It's not.
Right. I mean, I think you're exactly right. I mean, if the public gets to the point that they do not believe that the president is being honest with them, and I'm, you know, his 37% of the people who believe him, if he starts losing that, which there have been no signs of, but if people believe that he is not telling the truth consistently, and we basically, many of us do believe that, it is hard for him to maintain a sense of order. As far as the Republicans go, no, they didn't jump to his defense. Some Democrats did. Senator Leahy put out a very strong statement. I think Senator McCain's comments need further examination, because what Senator McCain did, which I thought was very interesting, was how the president's comments give strength and give a place of security to despots around the world. And I thought him tying it into international events and how the world looks to America and then looks at what Donald Trump is doing and then is able to say, well, we could suppress our press as well. That's what the president of the United States is doing. But we need more people like Jeff Flake to stand up. It's too bad you have to quit your job, leave the United States Senate, in order to have the courage to go do this type of thing. hopefully more Republicans will do it, because this is the most important thing that could happen to this country. And if people don't have the strength and the courage and the willingness to lose, you know, to lose their jobs, to lose their positions, to lose the affection of the public, if they don't have the courage to stand up and do that, then our country, for the long term, for our lifetime, our children's, our grandchildren's, we will not be the America that you and I grew up in. And that is a real tragedy. That needs to be stopped.
So fine. So shift that concept over to a related point, which is what happened during the alleged Oval Office interaction recently, where the president apparently used a phrase, we'll just call it S, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a podcast, I probably could swear, but I prefer not to. So, you know, where he said S-hole, and of course we had Senators Perdue and Tom Cotton out there going, oh, that's an extreme exaggeration. And it turns out, apparently, that what he may have said was S-house.
Right.
And so, but my point is not to get into that dialogue. It's when you talk about what you just talked about, people standing up. You know, back in the Watergate days, you had Republicans who put country over party and said there's something more important than just being a Republican in my agenda. It's called the preservation of our nation. And now, and I'm not going to equate that conversation in the Oval Office with anything Watergate, but what I'm saying is, you know, where are the Lindsey Grahams in the Republican Party to stand up to say something to the president either there or afterwards to say, yes, this was wrong? I mean, this notion of I didn't hear it, I didn't remember it. Are they that fearful of this president? And then, by the way, more recently this week, Congressman Adam Kinzinger, who's from the state of Illinois, from here, he goes after Senator Dick Durbin, who is the only one to come out and pretty much give an account of exactly what was said during that meeting. And Kinzinger comes out on our morning show and said, you know, that was just wrong. He should have said it to the president and not to the Washington Post. Except my memory was this didn't come out from Dick Durbin. This came out from other aides who were in the room, and then Durbin ultimately confirmed it. The point of it is, even with something like this, this president has his own party completely terrified to stand up to him in any way, shape, or form. Are they afraid of getting tweeted out?
Oh, yeah. I think the problem here, Paul, is that what is more important than keeping, you know, your job in Congress? Obviously nothing. Obviously your own morals, obviously your own convictions are not as important. We have seen a parade of Republicans step forward and say, gee, that's not what he said, only to find out that we're really splitting hairs here between the word, was it House he said? I mean, it's not exactly sure what he said.
Right.
But we understand what he meant. And also, you have to realize something. Donald Trump didn't just say this. This wasn't the first thing he said, and surely won't be the last. But if you go back to his very first comment as a candidate, where he attacked Mexicans as rapists and drug dealers, et cetera, and you just go through everything he has said along the way, it is perfectly consistent with what he has said in the past. Obviously, this man has a serious problem with other people from other countries, et cetera, and he expresses it. What the exact word is, I don't know. But it deeply troubles me that two United States senators would mince words here, you know, on such a fine line just to make Senator Durbin look wrong, and that a member of the president's cabinet would do the exact same thing is also deeply troubling. Look, we have a democracy in this country. We only have a democracy as long as the public supports it. And if our high-ranking officials are going to lie to us over and over and over again, even about minute things like this, in order to cover themselves, then we have a serious ongoing issue. If keeping your job in Congress, if keeping your job in the cabinet is more important than the American democracy and the way of life that we have had for over 240 years, then America has a much bigger problem that we need to deal with. Now, the one thing I will say about the congressman's comments, the one thing I do agree with, things that are in the Oval Office should stay in the Oval Office, and people shouldn't be running out and saying, well, this is exactly what the president said. I understand Senator Durbin was not the one who did it, but still, I do feel things in the Oval Office between the president and other leaders should stay there for the large part.
Well, look, can I just stop you on that one?
Sure.
I would agree that comments made in the private residence, so he and Melania, or for that matter, he and the senators, who he says, come on up, let's have a bite upstairs, mm-hmm. in the private residence. There's privacy there. I don't view the Oval Office. I revere the office of the president. I revere the White House. I don't view the Oval Office as a private room. I mean, there may be things that you know should remain private. You're having the deepest of Middle East conversations with leaders. I mean, I'm not going to say this is, you know, a blanket statement, but I believe I see the Oval Office as a room of the public, a room of the people. And so if you do cross a line or do something like what happened, I don't have a problem with it getting reported out. You didn't say it in your private residence, in your private space. You said it in public space.
That's interesting. I mean, I understand your point, but I also feel that the President of the United States, let me just say that this is what we are talking about specifically. I'm glad it came out. It should have come out. All I'm trying to say is that when the President of the United States sits with other people and is trying to negotiate or trying to come up with a solution to an issue or even privately talking to his staff, the President should have the opportunity and the staff should have the opportunity to say something not offensive like this, but maybe something ridiculous, maybe something that makes no sense politically, policy-wise, or whatnot, to get it out, to have a discussion, to have a debate. That should be private. You should be able to speak to the president. The president should be able to speak to his advisors in an open setting and be able to have the confidence that that's not going to get out. Sometimes it's the dumbest comment, you know, that something that makes no sense from a policy position, but needs to be said for people to discuss it and go on and do something better.
Well, Richard, I agree with you. Once again, I agree. You know, the night that the, you know, the whole house, so to speak, discussion happened, I watched a lot of conservative media, Fox News a lot. I wanted to see how it was being addressed there.
Mm-hmm.
And what I saw were a lot of commentators, people like Tucker Carlson, who said, what's wrong with having a discussion about who we let in the country? And what's wrong with talking about the merits? And as I'm watching this, I'm going, well, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But that's a spin on something that happened, which is very problematic. So I'll take that and added on to what you said. There's an article also coming out, may have just come out this week, which compares the style of President Trump to President Clinton, talking about the fact that Clinton was known to have these big blow-ups and swearing and whatever, and he had to be careful of them. I don't think anybody's talking about that, and I agree with you that we got to let a lot of that stuff happen to air some issues out. I think the issue here is that if the president was indeed referring to the continent of Africa as an S house or S hole or something like that, I mean, what my point is that is the kind of racially oriented comment that I think, whether done in the White House, whether done in an Oval Office or done in the East Room or whatever, it is something that you say, you know, I'm not sure it gets the privacy. This is a real concern about who occupies that office. I mean, are you getting the line? And it gets tougher and tougher because when you start saying, well, you can say this, but you can't say that, it's a real mess. But it's just that comment is much more telling than a lot of other things I think you seem to be referring to, that you should say the president and his cabinet should be free to talk.
Yeah, I agree with you again. I mean, look, there is a difference between saying something offensive to an entire continent, to people who, you know, are our allies, people we support, people we don't even know. But I mean, for the President of the United States to say vile and vulgar things about an entire continent, or Haiti, or El Salvador, wherever places,
and therefore Americans, because you're also talking about the people who have come here now.
Absolutely, that is different than what I am saying. I'm saying I prefer things in the Oval Office to stay in the Oval Office. However, if the president this president, the next president, whatever president, says something that is so offensive, such as this, I think it goes to the character of the person in that office. And that is the discussion we're having in this country that, sadly, we did not have enough of in the 2016 election, but that we're having now. And I think it's an important discussion to have about this man's temperament, about his character, because it influences policy, and it influences the way other people think. And it will be, I don't think it will ever come a time where I will be convinced that some of the things going on in this country, such as Charlottesville, such as a big uptick in anti-Semitic activities around the country, racial activities around the country, it will be a long day before I am willing to accept that a lot of it doesn't come from his rhetoric, that people don't hear it and feel it is okay to say the same things, to do the same things, because the president does it, and if he does it, we can do it. And that is corrosive to us, and we need to stop that. And if we need to have a debate about that, then that's something that is important and it needs to get into the public domain so we can have that discussion, because that is vital to our freedom and our future.
So let me shift a little bit over to the legalities of things. The Steve Bannon, of course, he's been subpoenaed by both the, interestingly, House Republicans to come in, and also by Robert Mueller. That's probably where things really happen. But that being said, as you know, when he did appear before the House committee this week, basically was, I'm not quite sure exactly whether he was claiming executive privilege or whatever it was. We know his lawyer had a live feed to the White House counsel, literally in live, in real time, reading them the questions, and he was being advised to essentially answer nothing. Now, you know, when you have the White House saying there's no collusion, there's no nothing, there's whatever, you know, let's be transparent, we're gonna cooperate fully. And I know you're a Democrat, so I'm trying to ask this in a really a neutral way, which is it just a lawyer? Is Bannon, would you advise Bannon to do the same thing? Hey, look, you might just be getting yourself into trouble, so it's just better to not answer these questions. Or do you look and just say, I think, a more layperson's view, which is to say, you know, if you got nothing to hide, how come you're not answering anything?
Well, first of all, let me say I think Robert Mueller is a genius in the way he handled this. You know, he issues a subpoena, but then he allows Bannon to come in and talk to his prosecutors privately. Sends a message to Bannon, we're not looking at you, because prosecutors don't usually call in people they're looking at. And I think he's going to get more through that type of cooperation. But on your point about how the White House is dealing with this, it's really pretty amazing. You would expect Richard Nixon to do something like this. I agree with you. If Steve Bannon has nothing to say, first of all, he shouldn't have told it to in the book Fire and Fury. He should not have divulged all that he did in that. So let me try to understand it. It's okay to speak to someone who's writing a book about it, but you can't tell members of Congress who are investigating it. That makes no logical sense. For the White House to clamp down on this as strongly as they are and to strong-arm this, and Steve Bannon, I mean, let's be honest, is running for his life. He has built up, you know, this national reputation. He's built up this company based on him being this ultra-conservative and based on his connections to the president. And the first instance, you know, where some of his supporters start pulling away from him and taking money away, you know, he recants what he says, and then he gets thrown out of Breitbart. But if you look at why the White House is doing this, in many ways it's counterproductive. They're trying to say there is no collusion and there's nothing to talk about. So let the man talk. Show that you have nothing to hide. Say, you know, we know that nothing happened. Whatever Mr. Bannon has to say, he has to say. It's fine with us. In many tactical ways, that would have been the smarter thing to do. Because you and I both know he's going to talk. He's either going to talk because he's going to be subpoenaed. He's either going to talk because they're going to promise him something, that they're not going to go further with something unless he does. But he is going to talk. For the White House to do what it's doing is just raising a red flag once again, and saying that we're really nervous about this. If you want my opinion on it, I think the president told his counsel, tell him to shut up. I don't want to hear him talking about this. And that's what they're carrying out. I think this is, I would be stunned if this was not a direct request by the president.
So if it is a direct request by the president, by the way, and again, your lawyer, you know the law here, the Supreme Court dealt with this, and they dealt with this back in the Nixon days when, you know, the question is what can they question? And the Supreme Court, I believe, was unanimous, as it pretty much said, you know what, when there are interests like a criminal investigation, that is going to supersede things like presidential privilege and executive privilege. Nixon lost that battle. That's how the tapes came out, the famous tapes in the 18 minutes. My guess is here that with the arguments of we want to know what was said before Trump became president, you know, and even in the transition, that one, that ought to be 9-0 saying there is absolutely no protection of that stuff.
Well, it is very hard to predict with this Supreme Court how they would come out. It should be 9-0. Yes, I agree with you completely on that. I mean, executive privilege and what happened during a campaign before someone was elected, I find that a little hard to understand how one could even say that, because it's, you're not an executive. I mean, so it makes no sense to me. And I think, again, I think the president is putting himself even more and more and more at risk by the actions he is taking. Because, look, something happened. We know something happened. It's going to come out what happened. I don't know when it will, but little by little, it is coming out. And by what he is doing, by trying to clamp down on people speaking freely about it, he's just raising the public's view that something serious happened here that he's trying to cover up. Will we ever get to the 37% who strongly support him? Maybe not. I think Nixon probably had 14 or 15% of the country who still believed him even the day he resigned. But he is making it more difficult for himself. We have seen with other people, by giving them immunity, by allowing them to testify, we have seen that Robert Mueller is getting the information he wants. Bannon will give him what he knows, whether Trump tells him to, tries to stop him or not. I think that is a definite. For the White House to be so heavy-handed makes it look awful.
When you think of the efforts to get at this information, one of the things, again, I mentioned this earlier, back in the early 70s, you had Republicans who put nation over party. Mm-hmm. It's how you had the Watergate hearings. This time around, though, you see millions of efforts to undermine Mueller, to fire him. I mean, I've been fascinated by seeing certain congressmen like Jim Jordan who are calling for the firing of Jeff Sessions, not over this, but the firing over other issues. Because, of course, what that does is if you get Jeff Sessions out of the way or he tells him to resign, then the president appoints a new attorney general and now you're stepping into firing Mueller. I mean, it all seems to be, to me, kind of a grand plan to get rid of this investigation. Once again, a real concern. I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. You should want to get to the bottom. But the problem is, if you're the 30% of the president's supporters, you believe this is all a waste of time and money. But it's hard to say that when there's already been a couple of indictments, a couple people have turned, all this kind of stuff. And then to sort of conclude, nothing, there's no there. There's something there. As Congressman Mike Quigley said on my show last week, he goes, if this is a witch hunt, they've already bagged four witches.
Well, look, Robert Mueller is above reproach. He's Republican.
He was until recently for Republicans, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly the point. But there's no one better to do this job. And I think many Americans feel that he should just be allowed to do his job. Let us know what actually happened. Look, come on. We waste a gazillion dollars a day on who knows what in government. The amount of money we're talking about is a drop in the bucket compared to, what the Defense Department wastes on some system that they're never going to use and never going to fulfill. So, I mean, the money argument to me is just preposterous. But for them to try to clamp down on this, there will be more indictments. We will find out what happens. I think most people believe that maybe the Russians did not determine the election, but they sure as heck were involved in the election. I mean, look, we still don't know how the documents were leaked from the DNC, how they got to WikiLeaks, how they got out into the public. We don't know the answers to that yet. And there are answers to that that we need to know. Do we need to know it to change the 2016 election? Of course not. Donald Trump won the election. He's the president of the United States. But I'm concerned about 2020, and I'm concerned about 2024, and I'm concerned about what the Russians are doing in Eastern Europe with their elections. I am deeply concerned about this, and the only way we are going to know so we can protect ourselves from anything that any country does, Russia or some other country does in the future, is to understand this. We're not trying to undermine the authority of the President of the United States. He is the legitimate president. We either like it or not, but he is a legitimate president. But if we don't find out what happened here, well, then we are doomed to have it happen again. And that's the worry.
Just a final topic to talk about with you, Richard, and that's DACA. As we talk right now, no deal yet. And of course, 6 months ago or whenever it was, the president knocked this out. You know, Paul Ryan said there's no rush. Well, let's because Democrats wanted to deal with this at the end of 2017. And Paul Ryan's like, plenty of time. Of course, they don't do anything on time. The problem is, if you wait much longer, you'll have sort of bad things happening to people. You can't do this on March 4th after DACA, set to expire on March 5th. You do have, of course, the West Coast court that stepped in to say applications need to be accepted. So that puts a muddle. So let me ask you to again put on your lawyer hat. How does all this play out? It's the lawyer and the political strategist in you. There's the court case, which says you can't just end DACA. So that keeps going. And the Trump administration appealing that through the system, that can take months, unless there's some sort of emergency hearing at the Supreme Court. I don't know. And at the same time, you have Democrats and Republicans, 80% of the country that says fix this. You have Democrats saying we're shutting you down potentially if we don't. We don't know if there's a deal to keep the government going. I'm going to guess a short-term deal comes into play. But where does the DACA thing end?
Well, first of all, I think the Ninth Circuit is something worth talking about. I mean, the president, his immediate reaction to the court case in the Ninth Circuit was to attack the judiciary, once again attacking a major pillar of American democracy. Instead of saying, I disagree with the opinion, he attacked the court. I think the Republicans are handling this very, very wisely, actually. I mean, it's somewhat frustrating. As we sit here today, the Democrats are going to be faced with a decision. Do you shut down government and take with it the children's health program, the CHIP program, or do you vote on the children's health program, take that, take a three-week extension to February 16th or whatever it is to keep the government running, and then continue and try to deal with this? The American people want a decision on DACA. A few days ago, a gentleman who has been here since he was 11 years old, who has children who were born here, who has an American wife, was deported to Mexico. I don't think many Americans agree with that.
You would have the folks who are anti-immigration basically saying, look, was he here illegally? Yes, he was. Well, then, you know what? I'm sorry for the consequences.
Right. He came here at 11 years old because his parents brought him here. I mean, it's a little hard to argue that that child had the decision to make where to stay or where not. We have to come to a decision on DACA. I think the Democrats' strongest position is tying it to the ongoing of the government. When you give up on the ongoing of the government, you know, the continuation of the funding for the right. government, then you kind of lose your moral high ground. But I think what the president and the Republicans are trying to do is put the Democrats in a box. Do you vote against children's health, or are you responsible for shutting down the government? My prediction, which is I think similar to yours, is that the government's not going to shut down. But if it did, I think most American people are going to blame the Republicans. You're the president, you're the Senate, you're the Congress. Okay, you have all three. You should be able to fix this stuff and get it done. So I think the Democrats in some way have a stronger hand, but pushing them to vote against something as urgently important as children's health is going to be a hard pill for them to swallow. I think it's a hard pill for a lot of Republicans to swallow. So it would not surprise me if they push through a spending plan and children's health this week, and then try to come back and deal with DACA. But the clock on DACA is running. We're not far from the end. They have to come up with a solution. It is virtually impossible for me, no matter who the President of the United States is, to see members of the Senate especially to vote to deport hundreds of thousands of people. I find that hard to believe. They will come to a solution. I don't think it will be the solution necessarily that we want, but there will be a solution that will allow these people to have some sense of security in the United States while hopefully they're allowed to work towards citizenship.
Yeah, as we're talking now, of course, the Republicans are trying to float a plan that would extend CHIP, that children's health plan, for 6 years and hold off on medical taxes. They're trying to give a little bit to Democrats, a little bit to Republicans, as they're trying to just keep the store open for the next 30 days. We'll see how that plays out sooner than later. By the time people are listening to this, that question may be there. But a lot of your other thoughts and predictions, we shall see how those play out in the coming weeks and months.
Sorry. They are still trying to kill Obamacare, and the plan that they have forward today further damages Obamacare by taking a number of the taxes on businesses away that are supporting and paying for Obamacare. So little by little, they can't get rid of it, but they're trying to erode it.
Yeah.
That's a big part of this that a lot of people are not talking about.
And you're right. And the question people will pay, I mean, until I don't know when that day comes that the 13 million, before they ever got to the stuff they're dealing with currently, but the 13 million who are going to lose their health care just from the tax bill that went through, if that magic moment hits. I don't know that hits until next year, right? I mean, if people have paid their premiums for the year, they don't.
Right.
They won't know until maybe after those midterm elections that, wait a minute, what happened? I'm losing my health care. What happened? But it may be too late in terms of the impact on voting. I think that all political calculations are done to make sure that the next election protects the people who are always in power, whoever that is.
Exactly.
Richard Gordon, political strategist, attorney. You're always a great person to talk to because you just got all the perspectives lined up, and I sure appreciate your time. As always, my friend, we'll talk to you soon, both on Politics Tonight on television and this podcast. Thank you. Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnick.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.